Hello everyone, this is Space Cafe Podcast and I am Marcus. Right after recording the following episode, I sat down to rewatch Interstellar, the stellar movie, you know. Quality time for me and my wife, who is not particularly the type of nerd that I am, but who is nerdy enough to share my passions, as I do with hers, by the way, just in case you just wanted to chime the sexism alarm. If you haven't seen the movie yet, here's a quick overview without too many spoilers. Earth is dying, crops are failing, storms are sweeping the planet, and people are looking for a way out. You should definitely watch this movie. Even though we are currently living in a time when we still watch such content for pure entertainment, we are, in this episode, taking a leap forward in time, when entertainment turns serious, with a real project that could come directly out of this film, or another, as we'll see in a moment. Our episode today takes us to Paris, in France. Here, Barbara Belvisi is working on a fascinating futuristic project that gets her in and out of NASA, and not only that. Interstellar Lab builds growth containers for any plant, whether on Earth or in space. And you know what? Those containers are already available for purchase. Hard to believe? Well, these are the stories we love, don't we?
You let me know when I start, and then I just press the button.
Ladies and gentlemen, join me in welcoming Barbara Belvisi, CEO of Interstellar Lab.
At Interstellar Lab, our mission is to design and to build systems to allow for life to thrive under any environment. And we do so deployable structure on Earth, low Earth orbits, and for future lunar and Mars mission.
I'm taking a look at your website, interstellarlab.com. And you seem to be a huge fan of Stanley Kubrick. You seem to be a huge fan of Johnny Ive. Maybe he works for you.
No.
Because he's not with Apple anymore. Seriously, this is great stuff you're doing. So those pods, they remind me of Stanley Kubrick's Space Odyssey. Was that film an inspiration for you?
Yes, of course. Of course. I watched it when I was a little kid. And when you're a kid, it's a bit of like a dystopian weird movies with a lot of those like slow moments and they're like, you know, back and forth between, you know, futuristic space and then the, you know, the Cro-Magnon man. So that's the prehistorical man.
Can I ask you a nerd question? The docking sequence, when the pod docks to the spaceship, how long do you think that takes in the movie? How many minutes?
I don't know. I don't remember. It's
it's about 7 to 8 minutes. Just a,
no
a
way.
Docking sequence. Yes.
You serious?
Yeah, yeah. So
okay.
we're not used to that anymore. These days.
No, not at all. Not at all. These days, like docking, they're pretty, you know, they're pretty fast. The only one you have like a long docking session is on Interstellar when he's trying to, you know, to get back where the ship is like rotating very fast. So he needs to adjust his, you know, velocity to meet the one of the stations. Yeah.
Wonderful.
I'm not sure it's a 12 minutes session though.
But you know what? I'm so glad that we're old enough to be able to appreciate those films from back in the day.
Those movies were so inspirational from all of us. And
So I'm drifting off a little. Sorry for that. So you were just mentioning that Stanley Kubrick was a huge inspiration to you as a kid. So in how far did that help inspire what you do at the moment?
I mean, Stanley Kubrick and a lot of sci-fi movies. I mean, another one I can mention, obviously, with what we're doing is also Silent Running, where they're building those gigantic dome and they're carrying life in outer space. And so of course, science fiction was a very big inspiration for what we do. And I think in our way, our company, we're trying to propose also another future compared to a lot of the dystopian future that you can find in sci-fi movies. Mm-hmm. We're trying to bring another perspective. You know, what if it doesn't end up as a, you know, disaster on Earth and we all need to leave the planet and go to mm-hmm. a space station or somewhere else. But what if, you know, there was a company designing systems so we can live sustainably on Earth and in space. And so I think it was a source of inspiration when it comes to the design and how to, you know, create structure to protect life in space. But it's also a source of inspiration in terms of finding the right narrative that we want to communicate to, you know, to the kids, you know, that there is hope and it's not all dystopian sci-fi.
Before we get into what all this means and where this could lead and whatnot, so let's talk a bit about what this project is all about. So you're building those pods, beautiful white pods I can see right in front of me on your website with glass domes. So how big are they? Like a school bus?
Yeah, it's actually a good comparison with the school bus. So we have different models. The first model, we call it Model S. It's for Stardust. So it's the baby version of the dome, of the inflatable dome. They're actually not made of glass. They're made of ETFE, which is very durable and environmental friendly material, but that is giving the translucidity of glass and very good looking at when it's inflated. So it's an inflated structure and the Model S is the size of roughly the size of the bus. It's 11 meter long, 6 meter wide, and 5 meter. And so it's, you know, we have a composite base, a little bit like a boat. You mm-hmm. have like this shell, and at the entrance you have a airlock, so a sealed door, and behind you have this inflated membrane where we blow air inside the pod, and then poof, the structure is inflated and it's standing.
What is inside of this pod?
And inside of this pod, so we implement actually in the base different hardware system, an air system, a water system, so we can create perfect climatic and atmospheric condition. So we can recreate any type of climate within the dome, within the biopod. We can like recreate any climate. And so we use that, the application of the biopod is for indoor farming agriculture. Like one of the main application we have on Earth is to grow plants to feed people or, you know, to go into cosmetics and research. This is also one of the things that we're doing. So yeah, it's a kind of a biosphere, you know, that we're creating inside the pod.
That's a good point, because the biosphere project has been done already. So it didn't work out. So what is different in your project?
Okay. First thing I want to mention is that we are a big fan of Biosphere 2 that was done in Arizona. For me and for many, you know, engineers and scientists, it's not a failure. It was actually a great success. It's amazing what they did technologically speaking. At this time, it was like so, you know, so advanced compared to, you know, compared to what everyone else was building. The truth is, didn't succeed in terms of, you know, their goal to recreate a perfect balance by nature and not to have any, you know, hardware intervention. Mm-hmm. And so this is where stand our main difference, that we are not trying to recreate climate that will, you know, balance themselves. We're mm-hmm. using a lot of technology and hardware to recreate the climate we want to achieve inside. And so we're mixing biology and technology, but we are not there so that's a very different approach from Biosphere 2, where they were trying to recreate biosphere that will self-sustain themselves. Mm-hmm. We are using technology and we have no problem saying that. The second thing is also that Biosphere 2 is designed as a structure that cannot move and it's fixed. In our case, it's a deployable system that you can put anywhere you want on this planet mm-hmm. and in the future on the moon. And so that's very different design concept, deployability approach. And that's the two main difference.
But you just mentioned that your pods are not self-sustaining. But I think if I understand that right, they are. But you are employing technology to make them self-sustaining, right?
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
So Biosphere 2 was trying to replicate the Earth in a closed environment and have everything working by itself, okay? Like a small planet. Mm-hmm. that we don't do that. We're not doing it. What we're doing is we're recreating climatic conditions, and then we help life grow inside. But it's not like we just put it there and we let it. We hope it's going to find the balance. The pod itself, it's automated. The automation of the pod will help finding the balance. Mm-hmm.
You know, that reminds me of those bottled gardens that you can buy. Yeah. Do you have something like this?
Of course, I have one in my desk.
Show me.
Yeah. So this one is not bottled, but this one is in glass. So it's a glass jar. And inside you recreate a micro a biosphere when you have we have a soil, you have several rocks, several plants, and it's self-contained and it supports itself. So you don't need to water it. And because of condensation, because of the temperature outside, you're getting water that is going back into the soil, feeding the plants. And then the continuous stem plants sucking the CO2 and some other producing the CO2.
It's the perfect plant for the busy entrepreneur.
Exactly. It is.
Let's go back to Interstellar Labs. You, on your website, I read that it's an environment-controlled pod for crop cultivation on Earth and life support in space. This sounds fascinating and at the same time frightening, because it seems like you're preparing for the worst by setting something up on Earth to help grow crop on Earth. Because why would I need a pot on Earth and not have the crop grow in the open field?
Sure. The truth is what we're facing right now on Earth is we have a population that is really, that is, you know, huge, growing. And we need to feed everyone. Mm-hmm. We need to bring food to all the people living on this planet. The reality is that agriculture is consuming too much land, mm-hmm. traditional agriculture, too much land. And if we want to be able to, you know, suck CO2 out of the atmosphere, we need to bring land back to the wilderness. So we need a new way of growing food that are much more efficient and using less land. Agriculture is using way too much water, the traditional agriculture. Mm-hmm. So you need new technology to grow plants that are not going to use, you know, as much water as it's used right now. Mm-hmm. And the third part is agriculture, as we know, affecting the soil and the quality of our soil. Mm-hmm. And this is also one of the main problems when it comes to pollution, protection of biodiversity loss that we are experiencing. Mm-hmm. So if you want to be able as a species to provide food for all human beings on this planet, we need new food production system. Mm-hmm. So we need indoor farming, we need indoor farming solution that are, you know, where we can stack system, use mm-hmm. much less land. And so our pod, they're just one of the possible solution to grow plants in a closed environment where we consume less water. You don't touch the ground, you don't affect the ground, and you grow everything like vertically, like horizontally also, but stacked. So you use much less land. And so the goal is not to be like, oh my God, you know, planet Earth's going to die. And so mm-hmm. we need to grow in our system. The point is more like, okay, guys, we have a food production issue. So let's use a pod because we can grow much more food than actually in a huge land field. And then we can give land back to wilderness mm-hmm. and we can have a lot of life and and keep the biodiversity of our planet. Mm-hmm. That's more what we're trying to do.
That's most fascinating. So how much food do I get out of such a pod?
Sure. One biopod can bring that enough food for a group of 10 people, mm-hmm. like all the fruit and vegetables you will need. So it's a small, so the small version, so the 60 square meter, the one that is 11 meter long, it's food for 10 people. Then we have a much bigger version. So we have model double S, which is supernova, and supernova is 10 times the size of the model S. And so with this one, you can feed, big community, a big group of people. And now, but this one's not ready yet. It's going to be something coming further down the road. Otherwise, meanwhile, you can buy different types of different biopod and provide enough food for a lot of people.
Nice, nice. I'm still looking at your website as we speak. And so is this pod designed for plants only, or is there also a place where I could possibly live next to my plants?
So this one is designed is the design is optimized for plant growth.
Mm-hmm.
So all the system that we put inside the shell, so the base, is really designed so we can boost the level of CO2 because plants, they love CO2, mm-hmm. you know. So we suck CO2 out of the atmosphere to boost the level inside the dome. And you don't want to do that with human because CO2 makes us dizzy. It's not... You want to do that with plants, but not with humans. And the water system, we catch back the water and we put it in the nutrient dosing system. So all the selection of the hardware is done to specifically for plant growth. The truth is, it's a modular design. So the way we're building it is that you can remove stuff. And if you want to get rid of the crop cultivation and put a bed on top of it and then turn off the CO2 level because you just want to sleep there, dude, that's fine. That works. You know, you just go on the app and change the settings.
Turning up the CO2, you can get a good sleep.
Yeah, also. But it's mostly designed for, you know, agriculture. And also very important, especially the first one that we're working on, they're designed for terrestrial requirements. So they're not designed to survive on low Earth orbit. They're not designed to, you know, survive on the moon. Well, not survive, but to work on the moon. We need to change a lot of the systems inside. So that's part of, you know, that's the second phase of the roadmap. As now we're getting the biobot on Earth and we're working with Space Agency, NASA, and the French Space Agency to have a version we could put on low Earth orbit by 2025, 2026.
Fascinating. So how far is the development of the pod, the earthly pod in the first?
We're actually building it. We're building the first full scale right now here in the facility in Paris. So it's within, which months are we? November. We're a little bit delayed. It was planned for early for January, but because of the supply chain issue, we're a bit delayed. So it's going to be end of March, early April. It's going to be full running here. I'll send you an invite.
Absolutely. So this is for demo purposes only.
It's actually the way we did a lot of like super small prototype to test like automation and to test sensors, to test some of the system. This one, the way we are designing, we're actually with the tooling that we do, we can manufacture between 10 to 20. So we do a first one, we validate, you know, everything's working. Of course, some stuff's not going to be working. So we're going to change some stuff. But then the shell, the structure and the membrane, that's not going to change for the first 10 units. Mm-hmm. The plan is actually to install 10 units in 2022, 10 to 20 units. We'll see, but end of 2022.
Fascinating. Stupid question. Do I need a gardener for my plants?
The thing is that you need some human intervention because we are not doing the harvest. So you will need to go in there and actually to put the crop, like the seeds or the crops, depending on what you're growing, inside the crop cultivation system. And then you come back inside for the harvest. Mm-hmm. But we're limiting human intervention by automating the water, the humidity, the light, the nutrient delivery, and all this stuff. So you should not need to have a farming degree, sure. But there will be some medication, our users will not screw up the entire system, but we're going for, you know, as much as automation as possible. Mm-hmm. And then right now our customers are mostly B2B, so they do have knowledge in plant cultivation.
So who would be your typical customer?
So we have three groups of customer. Like if I try to simplify, the first group is for, you know, research, and I'm going to put space agencies also over there because it's research, but they're using the pod as a, you know, to play with the atmospheric and climatic condition. It's whether to stress plants and to see how they're reacting, is to test different seeds, to do what is called phenotyping and finding the right conditions for the plants to grow. So this is like university and space agencies. Mm-hmm. That's one group. The second group is, it's very different approach. They need to produce certain type of plants or food. So it's like pure indoor farming solution. Okay, we need a pod of vanilla because we have shortage of vanilla. And so can we grow vanilla? And right now we're testing vanilla and it's working well in our aeroponic system. And so it's like it answers specific demand for a specific plant. And
This is super interesting because this creates the different geographic places on Earth that are needed still to grow different types of plants, of fruit. Banana, for example, won't grow in Austria or Germany. But in this way, you're restructuring the global food production system.
Yes, you understand.
Theoretically.
Yeah, exactly. You understand. Mm-hmm. The vision is to be able to, because we can recreate any type of climate and provide a solution to grow any type of plant. The vision is to be like, okay, if we can bring locally the production of food that is done, you know, in different places in the world. And so we can, you know, have a much more efficient agricultural system. If you can grow banana and exotic fruit in your garden, you don't need to go out there and buy, you see. Yeah.
I can become a banana or kiwi farmer here in the Alpine regions of Austria. I like that.
Yeah. Made in Austria. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's a nice selling point. You get your glacier banana.
Yeah.
That's a nice thing.
Yeah, you see, there are tons of, you know, huge marketing.
Yeah, I like it already. Sorry for interrupting. And you have your third customer.
No, the third type of customer is a much more toward food production. And it's hospitality businesses and cities and municipalities. We're very big in Middle East. This is where we have a lot of, well, not the only place, but we have a lot of traction over there. And they need food production to grow food in desertic zone. And biopod is making, you know, complete sense for them. So they can have diversification also in the plants that they're growing. And not only leafy green, what most of the, you know, today indoor farming companies are providing. We are offering all other type of crops, which is very interesting for them.
So why are those pots relatively small in size? So for example, if you want to provide food for a village, why not scale this up to, I don't know, football field size pots?
Yeah, will do. Okay. It's just one step.
Okay.
It's just the first step.
Good. Sorry.
It's the first step. Yeah. No, it's the first step is like we need to start with a, you know, a good size of a product that we can easily build and deploy. And then there is the big baby, the supernova one.
All right. Yeah. Count me in. I'm trying to hit register for pre-order. Let's see what happens because I want to see the price tag. Okay. Welcome to the pre-registration. 200,000?
200K.
Okay, good. So let me hit start. Now let's find out.
Cool, yay, get one.
All right, so in the meantime, Barbara, that's such a fascinating story. Before we go into space, let's talk a bit about yourself and why you came up with that idea in the first place. So maybe let's go back in time.
Okay. I think the first thing I want to mention is somewhere everything started in the childhood. Mm-hmm. And because as many of us, you know, I was a, you know, nerdy kid so my father is a musician. My mother is a study law. So they have like really nothing to do with space. And we're living in the suburb of Paris in a, you know, a small apartment and like nothing related to, you know, engineering or space or food production. But as a kid, I was very passionate about stars and biology and you do building my own stuff. So I will study the plants. I will have my collections of plants and, you know, playing the little gardener. And then I was working on, you know, building system and circuits. And we're three girls. I'm the oldest one. So I was always at playing with my dad and working on like some electrical things. And I was always dreaming of like the stars and teaching kids at school about the solar system and stuff. Like you're like really like nerdy, a little bit weird, but sweet.
So you were teaching kids at school those things, being a kid yourself.
That's the I don't remember that very well, but my mom told me actually a few days ago. That's why I'm mentioning it, that I worked an entire night by myself and making a huge billboard explaining how the solar system was working, different planets and all of that. And she was like, I couldn't stop you. It was like 2 a.m. and you were like cutting the planet and like sticking them and be like, so this is the sun and this. I mean, whatever. When you're passionate about something, you know, it's hard to stop.
Did you have many friends?
Actually, in high school, yes. Before, it was a bit hard. Before they made me skip a few classes. So I was young compared to the other kids. Mm. But then it was better in high school, much better. Then I was a cool kid. But before, it was a bit more complicated. So I'm saying that because I think there is a lot of, you know, what we end up doing as an adult that is coming from the childhood. And so it's funny to think about everything that I surrounded myself with when I was a kid. and what I'm doing now. It's very similar. Like, even if you look, you know, I'm surrounded by plants. I have like in my bookshelf, I have books about plants and architecture. And it's very similar to what I had as a kid. But then the actual idea of like building Interstellar, it came, you know, 2016, 17. I left my previous company. I started, it was a investment fund dedicated to hardware startup, deep tech startup. We were financing a lot of like robotics, gadgets and system, and many of them that were manufacturing in China. And so I help a lot of entrepreneurs from an idea to, you know, selling actual hardware product. But the truth is what's not really helping the planet. Mm. And so I had this aha moment where I was like, okay, this is like really not aligned with what I wanted to do. And so I left and I started studying, you know, trying to tackle one of the main problems that we have on Earth, and food production was a very obvious one. Like, you know, and how the pollution, the problems that we have, everything that I explained it in the beginning, the water shortage and you know, the loss of biodiversity. And so I started studying how we can integrate food production, water treatment and waste management. But I did that for Earth. And when I started studying all of that, it was at the same time then the boosters from SpaceX came back. Hmm. And it was really like the moment in the space industry where SpaceX was proving to the world that a private company could actually do the rockets, the reusable rocket, but also they were showing a way to go back to the moon and to go to Mars. And that's how I realized that, you know, the dream of becoming a multiplanetary species was not too far away, was about to happen. And that there was a link between the system we will need to live on another planet and what we need on Earth. So what if we got the opportunity to, you know, go back to Earth and to design a new system so we can live in a sustainable way? And that's how I came up with the idea of building, you know, this greenhouses system that's, it's going to be cool on Mars and on the moon to feed the astronaut, but also it's going to be super useful on Earth to feed humans here.
You know what? I find it hilariously fascinating and sad at the same time to see that you're trying to recreate something that we already have and seem to have no understanding as to how to cherish it as human beings, because we have the perfect space pod, or however you want to name it, right here, right now. And this is our planet Earth. So what you do is the epitome of living sustainably. So can you tell me why we are having such a hard time to do it at scale as human beings? Because you know very well how it needs to be done from a technical perspective. But from an everyday perspective, we seem to fail. I know it's a big question.
Yeah, it's a big question.
You can skip to the next one.
I like this question.
Sometimes I think the planet is too vast, too big to understand. So maybe we need something small.
Yeah, I think it's hard for at human scale for a human to really perceive the consequences of the behavior. And it took us a long time to realize that, you know, maybe it was not that smart to take all this, you know, carbon, like all the oil that is, you know, inside the earth, and to take it out and then to burn it and to increase the CO2 level. It took us some time and to really understand the consequences of our action. So the question of is the planet too big for a human, I think is a relevant one, because we're not measuring the immediate effects. So we don't understand that, because we do this have, you know, tremendous impact on our planet. And so it's destroying the balance of the biosphere. I understand you for saying it's sad to have to go back to another small system.
Yeah.
Because we're not able to understand it right now. The other thing for me is also there is no way back. Like the population's growing, technology's here, you know, progress is part of our daily lives. So it's like trying to stop a train that is going at, you know,
at full speed.
Full speed. And the strain of, like, you know, humanity expanding and progress going there, and the, you know, and new souls coming on this planet, they also want to access the same level of technology that other people. So it's just like this race that is on, and trying to stop it and be in front of the train and be like, oh, stop, let's go back to the old age. I'm sorry, guys, it's not going to happen. So, yeah. So my perspective is more, okay, this is happening. So what can I do to try to help the train go in the right direction? And so I'd rather like jump on, you know, this like fast train, the technology train, and be like, let's go this way. You know, let's try to use the technology to build a better future, because this was going the wrong direction so far. So, yeah.
But I feel like it's so funny to see that if someone came to you and put the exhaust pipe of his diesel car into your hands and said, put it into one of your pods, you would say, no, don't do that. You would kill the atmosphere in there and you would break my pot and no plant would grow in there. So we have this understanding that this is just not working and at large scale we're doing it. So anyway, I'm digressing here into darker fields. But I think still it's a valuable discussion we can have, because you're going in a direction that has huge potential to help the planet heal. But now let's go upward. Let's go into space. So,
yay.
So how far from launching one of your pods into space?
Okay. So before we put one pod in space, there's a lot of stuff we need to do. So if we look at our roadmap for space, the next step is a system that we call Nucleus. For this one, we want a NASA phase one. We're moving into phase two. So Nucleus is a combination. It's another form factor, but it's very similar to Biopod. So it's not like egg shape like Biopod, but it's a combination of several cubic system. Same, we control the climatic, the atmospheric condition and everything. And that's design fits much, you know, in an easy way in an orbital station. So it's very similar to the system that NASA has been using to grow plants in the ISS. And so the first step for us is actually to prototype our system. And that's what we're going to do in the 12th and in the context of a NASA partnership. And the target is to be ready to put that into a station, whether it's going to be ISS or another one, depending on how fast they are dismantling the ISS and the other one building their station, but it's like 2025. Yeah, it's soon.
That's like day after tomorrow in cosmic scales. Why can't you just take one of the Earth pods ready to be used on Earth and take them into space? Is it for insulation because it's too cold out there? So what's the difference? Why do you need an upgrade for space?
It's going to change the material. The material we're using on them, we're going to add layers. So we have more thermal insulation. The Earth system and the hydraulic system needs to be a little bit different because there is it's low gravity over there. So it doesn't behave the same way, cannot work there. So we need to make some tweaks. And I mean, I actually changed some of the hardware. So it meets the requirements. Yeah. I mean, meanwhile, we're doing the cubic format for the space station. We also working on a docking unit, like an inflated unit, which is much more similar to the Biopod that we can put into an orbital station. And there is the lunar version of the Biopod as well, which is going to be a bit different in design, but it's going to be like an inflated structure as well to put on the lunar surface. But that requires a bit of before we can put a full-scale Biopod on the moon, we're going to ship small units and see how they inflate, you know, how plants are reacting inside, all of that.
Sure. So what would you love to grow on the moon? So what would be your vegetable if you could choose? Strawberries.
Why are you saying that? We're working on a strawberry biopod right now. I'm not kidding. And it's fun. It's, you know, strawberries is what's very annoying with this plant is that you need to... It's super hard to start from seeds. And so the way the industry is working right now, you need to buy like small plants and do the propagation.
Let's plant an apple.
That's myself. I'm making the digression.
Okay, so we have
apple is hard, but we can do definitely. Okay. No, but strawberries, sure, we'll try. No, but honestly, in terms of vision and what I want to put in space, I think it will be really awesome if we could have, you know, combination of several biopods, because biopods, you can plug them together mm-hmm. to form a flower, and it's called an eBios when you mm-hmm. put them together. I would love to represent the five continents mm-hmm. and we choose like a specific climate of a specific region, nice. But then we can put like a mini Earth mm-hmm. on the moon. I mean, I know it's very like, poetic or anything, but I think it's beautiful in terms of saying, okay, look, guys, we're able to, bring life to dead Earth satellite. And I think we should use the money from the mission as part of, something to protect endangered species on Earth. But there is something around that, and that is very appealing to me. But that's not going to fit the astronauts. Mm-hmm. But there's something around it that I found very
appealing, because you could say in the main building, you could say, so are you guys ready for dessert? And someone could say, well, we're missing cinnamon. So you could send someone to the cinnamon island pod to get some. Okay. So I think I got it. All right. So what is NASA saying to your plans?
We're very good friends, especially with the Kennedy Space Center team. So they're specialized in plant production. They're very aware of what we're doing. I was with them last week. We're looking at several different things regarding the biopod, but also regarding the nuclear system that I was mentioning mm-hmm. for more designed to feed into in a station. We're moving into prototype in this system that we designed for NASA competition. We are offering plant cultivation system for plants, but also for mushrooms and insects. Mm-hmm. So, let's see how we go. There seems to be interested in this stuff. So I think we're sharing a lot of, this guy's been working for like many years. The team at the Kennedy Space Center, on plant growth, and they funded the pillars of indoor farming that everybody's using right now on Earth. And so they're all very supportive in what we do, and they want us to succeed.
Nice. So why are you potentially capable of doing something that NASA hasn't been able to do in decades? Because, I mean, like, the vision to have extraterrestrial bases for humans where they will need food and whatnot, that vision has been around for more than 50 years now. So what is different now, maybe from a technological perspective, that you can compete with such a legendary space institution?
I don't think they didn't succeed. They did a lot of, they put a veggie system in space. They have the plant habitats where they're growing plants into the International Space Station. When it comes to building structures on the moon and on other planets to grow plants, I think first they need a vehicle to go there. I think everybody's very happy to have a company like SpaceX was working on that, because thanks to them, we're going to make it to go back, a human to go back to the moon in less than a decade. So first needed transportation. And the truth is that NASA is working with private companies to develop the systems. So they're not developing the system themselves. They work with other companies to do that. So they collaborate with company like us. And so we are leveraging all the research and everything that they've been doing for the past 30 years in plant growth to actually build system that their scientists could use in space to grow plants. So it's much more like a partnership and collaboration mm-hmm. and leveraging mm-hmm. on what they did and bringing them the hardware system. Because NASA is not here to build hardware. NASA is here to build science and to make sure the goal of space exploration is achieved.
Nice. Have you pitched a project to Elon yet?
Nope, not yet. I mean, we know a lot of people at SpaceX. I never had the opportunity to explain to him exactly what we're doing at Interstellar. I had the opportunity to meet with him twice, though, but I didn't pitch Interstellar to him. And I'm pretty sure it's going to happen, sooner or later.
Fascinating. First step, the moon, then next step, Mars. Is that right?
Yeah.
So what are the odds that this will happen? Is this still a dream for you? I mean, also the moon, because I mean, to get there is still a different cup of tea still, because now you're in the design phase and you're prototyping on Earth and you're producing on Earth already. But then to finally really make it to the moon, What are the odds that that some of your pods will, in a couple of years, be placed on the moon and later on Mars?
Well, honestly, if we were ready, I could, you know, there are some flights early next year. A very cool company based out of Houston, and they're launching the first rockets to go to the moon and to deliver payloads over there. So if we were ready, I could actually just by securing a spot in the rocket, put one of our system there and we can be to the moon. So the odds of like getting our system to the moon, you know, okay, the rocket might, you know, explode. But apart from that, it's very, very likely that it's going to happen, you know, in the, my goal is to do that before 2023. So it's going to be very, very soon, at least to have one of our planned growth system over there. The tricky part is not how are we going to reach the moon. It's more like, how are the plants going to survive inside our system? Like the last group that put a plant on the moon was the Chinese, and the plant died pretty quickly because it was the system was not really sealed. So on the moon, it's not a dream at all. Huh? It's like, okay, you know, I know which company we want to work with to put a system on the moon. You know, we have the schedule of the several launches. So it's more making sure we can pack our system and then we can have plants growing over there. So yeah. It's more a how than a...
Please give me the most honest answer you can imagine. Have you still hope for Earth? Or have you already given up on Earth because you're preparing your pods to go into space?
No, I'm not this... Earth not going to... die or disappear now. And my goal, you know, why is the company named Interstellar? I don't know if you remember, but in Interstellar, the whole movie is about, you know, Earth is dying. There are this gigantic storm that are killing all the food production system. We can't grow food anymore on Earth. Mm-hmm. And human beings are dying. So NASA's working on this, you know, huge ship, which is not the truth. And also they're looking for other planets for humans to go. And we at Interstellar, we're trying to build technology and systems so we can still live on Earth and protect life and the biodiversity that exists on this planet, but at the same time become a spacefaring civilization. And I think this is not opposites. Like, it's not like, okay, buy Earth and let's go to Mars. I mean, Mars is super harsh and it's boring and it's hard and, you know, it's not like Earth. So I'm not like I'm going to leave the Earth. It's the complete opposite. It's like, okay, let's use space technology to design systems so we can help live in a better way on Earth. And at the same time, let's build systems so we can carry life to other planets because life on Earth is so amazing that I think we need to protect it and to bring it to some other places. Nope, not everybody agree on this point. But I'm all favor of like, protecting Earth and life on Earth and then bringing life we have here over there.
Wonderful, wonderful, beautiful. We're closing in on the final minutes of our show. And you know what? This is episode 42. And you know what 42...
That's the answer.
By the way, cool. by the way, this isn't that an extremely genius finale for the big question? So you have that computer calculate for, I don't know, a couple of 100,000 years, and generations of humans are waiting for the final result, and then you get a freaking 42.
It's so cool. Yeah, it's so cool. I love it. It's super cool.
All right. So the last question usually in this series is a question that appeals to inspiring or to the power of inspiration. Is there anything you would like to share with us?
You know, I believe in the power that we as human, we have to actually shape our future. So I think it's super important for future generation that we bring, you know, inspiration and we starting putting a vision of what we want this future to be. And so I would like all of us to make this effort constantly every day to picture a future where, you know, life is thriving on Earth. And we, if you want to think like that, but that, and that we are, if you agree with this idea, but, and that we are, you know, becoming a spacefaring civilization, but caring life. Because the more we visualize it, the more we visualize the Earth full of life and, you know, and human living in a sustainable way on this planet. And we can picture, you know, big structure and big dome on the other planet, the more it's going to happen. Mm. And so we should stop visualizing dystopian future, but try to focus on, you know, how we want the future to look like. And by doing this exercise, you actually every day without even noticing it, you're going to change things and you're going to make this dream happen because you have this vision. And I think this is, a global exercise that we need to do, is to give beautiful images of the future of human life on this planet.
Wonderful. Maybe we should stop listening to the daily news for that.
I think it's a very good start. I personally don't listen to them.
Wonderful. Barbara Belvisi, thank you so much for that super inspiring chat. Wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Marcus. Thank you.
I really enjoyed this episode. 200K for a grow pod? Well, I will need to find out exactly what crop I want to grow in my backyard. On a website, I find that 50 square meters of arable land can sustain a family. I mean, the pods are about this size, so I calculate 25 euros for the weekly vegetable box times 200,000 divided by the result. Thanks for being here today. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. Do not forget, become a Space Watcher. By the way, we are super proud at Space Cafe Podcast that our mothership Space Watch Global makes it possible that we can be a completely ad-free program, and it is important for many reasons. First of all, we're not bothering you with annoying ads, but more importantly, we're completely independent and have no one to account for. And we want to keep it that way. And to keep it that way, we need your support. Jump over to Spacewatch Global. You can't miss the new banner. Seriously, every contribution helps keep the ship afloat. And not only that, to steer the ship where you want it to go and not someone else. Thanks for being here today. Stay tuned.